Live from the nation's capital, President Joe Biden and comedian Colin Jost headlined the White House Correspondents' Dinner. See all the biggest stars together in one room live April 27th at 8 p.m. on CNN and streaming on Max.
Thanks for that, Jake, and welcome to our viewers in the United States and around the world. Wolf Blitzer is off today. I'm Pamela Brown in the Situation Room. And happening now, President Biden says, quote, "We're still digging out of an economic collapse following a grim new employment report showing the U.S. economy added only a fraction of the number of jobs expected last month." And we're also following the war inside the GOP over former President Trump's influence and the future of the party. This hour, embattled Representative Matt Gaetz is teaming up with controversial Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene to rally Trump supporters in Florida. And this, of course, comes ahead of an expected vote next week where Trump loyalist Elise Stefanik will likely replace Liz Cheney in the House GOP leadership. Also new tonight, a federal grand jury has indicted four former Minneapolis police officers in the death of George Floyd, including Derek Chauvin, who was convicted of murdering Floyd by kneeling on his neck for more than 9 minutes. First, let's go straight to the White House. Tonight, CNN chief White House correspondent Caitlin Collins has the latest there. Caitlin, these dismal jobs numbers caught everyone off guard, right?
Yeah, Pamela, and they did even here at the White House, with the Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen telling us earlier that if she had had to guess and write the number down, she would have guessed it would have been higher than this number that was put out by the Labor Department earlier today. But President Biden, as he addressed this very weak jobs report, said he sees it as a sign that the economy is still very much recovering from the pandemic, and it's going to be a steep climb.
"We're still digging out of an economic collapse."
President Biden reacting to the grim new jobs report today.
"The virus stole their jobs, but we can't let up. This jobs report makes that clear."
U.S. employers added just 266,000 jobs in April, far short of the 1 million that economists had predicted and far below the numbers in March. Biden arguing that the hiring slowdown only reinforces the need for his economic agenda.
"Some critics said that we didn't need the American Rescue Plan, that this economy would just heal itself. Thank goodness we passed the American Rescue Plan."
But business groups and Republicans say the enhanced unemployment benefits that Biden extended in that plan are encouraging out-of-work Americans to stay home and leading to a labor shortage.
"That number suggests very strongly that the unemployment benefits are too generous and too long."
The president is pushing back, insisting today's data proves that's not the case.
"Today's report is rebuttal. The data shows that more workers are looking for jobs, and many can't find them."
Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen echoed President Biden, but conceded that some businesses have complained directly to the White House.
"There's no question that we're hearing from businesses that they are having difficulty hiring workers. I really don't think the major factor is the extra unemployment."
Some business owners are proposing their own solutions.
"People should keep the unemployment benefits if they go to work now and they commit to working to the end of the year."
The shock over the lackluster jobs report is stirring debate in Washington over the best way to revive an economy weakened by the pandemic.
"The American Rescue Plan, the $1.9 trillion bill passed in March, was too much. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that."
Biden says it will take time for the $1.9 trillion bill to reinvigorate the economy, pointing to the 1.5 million jobs created since he took office.
"We knew this wouldn't be a sprint, it'd be a marathon. Quite frankly, we're moving more rapidly than I thought we would."
And during those remarks earlier today, Pam, President Biden also used them to push for his $2.3 trillion infrastructure plan. That's something he just met with his jobs cabinet about in the Oval Office. That meeting went for a little bit over an hour as they were talking about what their priorities are in that proposal that they've put forward. Of course, that is something he is going to be meeting with Republican senators about next week back here at the White House. Still, so far, no Republicans have signed on to that $2.3 trillion proposal.
All right, CNN's Caitlin Collins live for us from the White House. Thanks, Caitlin. And meantime, a major new development tonight in the fight against the COVID pandemic. For the first time, the FDA will assess a vaccine for full approval, not just emergency use. CNN national correspondent Erica Hill has details.
Pfizer applying for full FDA approval of its vaccine for ages 16 and up.
For a lot of people who are on the fence, who are worried about, well, is this an emergency use? Should I get vaccinated? It will give them confidence. And then there are a lot of businesses who want to require that their employees be vaccinated, but have been waiting for this full approval. I think it's going to bump up vaccinations for a lot of folks.
A third of the U.S. population is now fully vaccinated. More than 150 million have at least one dose. But the average daily pace of vaccinations continues to drop.
When you get vaccinated, though, you break that chain of transmission by giving the virus one less place to hide in your community.
That proof in the numbers. The average rate of hospitalizations and daily reported deaths across the country continues to fall. And normal life feels closer than ever.
We need to give people a sense of hope and encouragement that things are going to get better because they are getting better.
New York City restaurants can now seat diners inside at 75% capacity. Kentucky's governor aiming for an end to all capacity restrictions by July.
We just held the largest sporting event since the COVID pandemic started. We are doing this right.
The former head of the FDA says it's time to move forward.
I think we should start lifting these restrictions as aggressively as we put them in. And I think the only way to earn public credibility is to demonstrate that you're willing to relax these provisions when a situation improves. That's what gives you the credibility to implement them when things worsen.
Air travel just hit a new pandemic record. The TSA screened more than 1.64 million people Thursday. A recent travel industry survey finds 72% of Americans plan to take a vacation this summer. That's up from just 37% in 2020. Yet another sign of pre-pandemic norms slowly returning.
Just pay attention to how much infection there is in the community. Exercise some basic level of safeguards. I think it's very safe to do stuff this summer.
And Pamela, just a note, we just learned that West Virginia, the governor of West Virginia, Jim Justice, saying that on June 20th, they're going to lift the indoor mask mandate in that state for public indoor spaces. He specifically cited the vaccine, saying that he believes that it will be authorized for 12 and above and believes that, you know, a good majority of those eligible will have had the vaccine by that point. He estimates some 65% of eligible West Virginians will have had at least one shot by that time. But he did stress that this remains a personal choice. And so if after June 20th, folks in West Virginia want to continue masking up, he said that's fine too. Pamela?
All right. CNN's Erica Hill, thanks so much. And let's get more on all of this with CNN medical analyst Dr. Lena Nguyen, an emergency room physician and former Baltimore City Health Commissioner. She joins us now in the Situation Room. Great to see you, Dr. Nguyen. So let's talk about what we just heard. As daily coronavirus cases, hospitalizations, and deaths are all declining, you just heard the former FDA commissioner say we should start lifting these restrictions as aggressively as we put them in. Do you agree?
Well, I agree with Dr. Gottlieb that things are definitely getting better, that we're turning a corner, and also that our public policies have to follow suit pretty quickly. And that's because public health depends on public trust. And we lose the public trust when we don't do common sense things. And so, for example, I think it's beyond time that we lift any blanket outdoor mask wearing restrictions that there still are. I think when it comes to indoor masking, it's a little more difficult because I don't think that vaccinated people need to be required to wear masks. But in a lot of public places, it's hard to differentiate who's vaccinated and who's not. And so in places with high levels of community transmission, I would still keep indoor mask mandates in place.
So with that in mind, now that more than a third of adults in this country are vaccinated, what changes would you like to see in the CDC's messaging, both to give vaccinated people more comfort, but also to motivate more Americans to go ahead and get the shot?
I think the CDC guidance needs to be clear, simple, and practical. And I think at this point, there really only are two things that we should be communicating. The first is that outdoors is much safer than indoors. I have little children who are not yet vaccinated. I want to keep them outdoors as much as possible. That's much safer. The second thing is that vaccination also makes everything a lot safer, too. People who are vaccinated do not pose a public health threat to themselves or to others, so they really should be able to do whatever they wish to do. Some can be more cautious, but others who want to go about everything they did pre-pandemic should be able to do that. And I think that would give a lot of confidence to people about the power of vaccines as well.
You mentioned you're a mother. Let's talk about what a lot of mothers and dads are thinking about right now, whether to get their child vaccinated. As we know, children ages 12 to 15 could be eligible to get vaccinated as early as next week. Your children, my children, don't fall into that age group. But what do you say to parents who are weighing whether they should vaccinate their children against this virus?
I'd say three things. The first is to talk to your child, because kids in this age category, adolescents, will have strong opinions. I think many of them will be very eager to be vaccinated so that they can resume a lot of their pre-pandemic life. Maybe they want to have sleepovers or want to see their friends without masks or distancing, which they can do if everybody is vaccinated. They don't need to be wearing masks potentially when they're going to camp this summer. That'll be really exciting for them. The second thing is look at the data. Be convinced yourself about the science. I'm convinced, and if I had kids in this category, I would want them to be vaccinated, but you should be yourself too. And then the third thing is consult your pediatrician. I think all of us as parents, we all want the best thing for our child. We trust our pediatrician, so I would talk to your child's doctor about this too.
All right, Dr. Lena Nguyen, thank you so much for joining us on this Friday.
Thank you.
And just ahead in the Situation Room, as the GOP prepares to oust a Trump critic from House leadership, two controversial Republicans are about to join forces in Florida to rally with the former president's loyal supporters. Embattled Congressman Matt Gaetz is about to join forces with another controversial Republican. That would be Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, as he fends off a federal sex trafficking investigation. CNN's Randy Kaye is joining us from their joint rally in Florida. Wow, Randy, it looks like a Trump rally. What do you expect to hear from Gaetz in just a few minutes from now?
Yeah, he should be taking the stage here, Pamela, very soon, although the campaign won't tell us, his team won't tell us when he's actually taking the stage. But it does feel like a campaign rally, as you can imagine. It's quite loud here. It actually feels like a Trump rally, and that's exactly what he wants. He wants to energize this crowd. He wants to speak to the 74 million people who voted for Donald Trump. He plans to highlight the destructive failing of the radical left. Those are his words, and Marjorie Taylor Greene will be at his side the whole way. He's going to talk about his vision for the Republican Party, which, as you know, really aligns with Donald Trump's vision. He's all about America First, which is the title of this tour, which kicks off here this evening. And he's all anti-globalism, so he's going to be talking about that. He'll also probably talk about Liz Cheney and her rejection of Donald Trump, which we know Matt Gaetz is not happy about. But we talked to a lot of people here today. They are very excited. There's a group here called Villagers for Trump, and they haven't changed their group's name, and a lot of them are here today to talk with him. I spoke to one woman who says she hopes that Matt Gaetz talks about vaccines, because she's not getting one because she doesn't believe she can get COVID. So that's part of what we're hearing from the crowd here today, Pamela.
All right, Randy Kaye, thank you so much. We're going to have much more on the story tonight from Randy on AC360. Thanks so much for that report. Well, tonight, Gaetz is also praising Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, the likely successor to Congresswoman Liz Cheney's GOP leadership post. Stefanik says she wants to be a fighter like Trump and unify her party. Our chief congressional correspondent, Manu Raju, has more.
Hi, everybody. As Congresswoman Liz Cheney is set to be booted out of House GOP leadership over her fight with former President Donald Trump, her likely replacement is burnishing her pro-Trump credentials.
We need fighters. President Trump is a fighter on behalf of the American people, and voters want fighters to stand up for them. And that's what I'm committed to doing, to unify the message, to earn the support of my Republican colleagues, and fight for hardworking American families.
Papering over her past criticism of Trump and the fact that just five House Republicans voted less often with him than she did.
My vision is to run with support from the president.
The battle over Trump and the future of the GOP expected to come to a head next Wednesday, when House Republicans plan to remove Cheney after she's called out Trump for his lies that he won the 2020 election. Stefanik, on the other hand, backed efforts in the courts and in Congress to overturn Biden's victory.
Unity can't exist under those pretenses, so what they're saying is,
if you don't go along with the big lie, if you don't go along with the fact that the election was stolen, then you basically need to go. And that's what that unity is.
Conservatives now are scrutinizing Stefanik's record, where she broke with Trump on his tax cuts, border wall, Afghanistan, and the environment.
She's very much a liberal. Her ambition told her, well, I better get on board with President Trump. But our worry is when she gets into leadership, she has no principles at that point.
Stefanik was once a Trump critic.
I think he has been insulting to women.
You were killing them, Elise.
But she won Trump's affection by vigorously defending him in 2019 during his first impeachment, elevating her stature and winning over House GOP leader Kevin McCarthy, who is quietly orchestrating the shakeup as he's keeping close contact with Trump. Yet the Senate GOP leader wants nothing to do with the former president and the House GOP turmoil.
Do you support Liz remaining in a position of power, yes or no?
What I'm focusing on is this new administration.
Many Republicans downplaying the former president's role in the January 6th Capitol attack.
I would just say to my Republican colleagues, can we move forward without President Trump? The answer is no.
Now, as she's trying to court the votes on to get the leadership position, she has privately indicated that she'll serve in the leadership for just the upcoming Congress, this current Congress. That means that if Elise Stefanik does, in fact, get the votes, she would be done from the leadership at the end of 2022. At that point, she's told her colleagues, according to a source familiar with these discussions, that she instead wants to seek the top post on the Education and Labor Committee. And perhaps that could win over some of those skeptics and critics over her more moderate voting record. And Pam, on Monday, she plans to meet with the House Freedom Caucus. That's where some of the critics are. Pam.
All right. Monty Raju, live for us from Capitol Hill. Thanks so much. And now let's get analysis from our senior political correspondent, Abby Phillip, and CNN senior commentator John Kasich. Great to see you both on this Friday. So much to talk about. Let's start with you, Governor. What goes through your mind seeing the Republican Party turn a blind eye to Congressman Gaetz and Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, but punish number three House Republican Liz Cheney for refusing to lie?
It gets crazier every day. I couldn't see this rally, but this raucous rally that is supporting, you know, someone in obviously in deep trouble, and I'm not about to convict them. Everybody deserves their day. About this lady, the QAnon person, I mean, I it's really pretty amazing to me. It gets to a level that's kind of hard for me to comprehend. And as I have just been saying lately, this is the way it is for today. I hope tomorrow is going to be a much different day.
You say it's hard to comprehend, but in some ways, Abby, it also sort of crystallizes where the party is right now, where the Republican Party is right now. And you heard Senator Lindsey Graham saying the Republican Party can't move forward without former President Trump. How did the GOP get from January 6th to here?
I think they've seen that most of the Republican base believes the election lies that Donald Trump has been spouting for months and months. I think the number is about 70% now, which is a huge, huge number. You know, and I know that Governor Kasich disagrees with me on this, but the energy in the Republican Party right now is on the Trump side of the ledger. That is what Lindsey Graham is trying to say. And Republicans up and down the ballot have basically concluded that if they are going to keep those people with them, they need to toe the line. They need to be allied with Donald Trump. And they need to punish people who spoke up about January 6th and who continue to speak up about the dangerous election lies that led to it. That's how we got to this point. And it's hard for me to see how that changes unless someone is able to find something that can resonate with Republican voters more than, a love of Donald Trump and everything that he stands for.
But I'm wondering, go ahead.
Pam, I don't really disagree with Abby on the fact that the energy is there. But unfortunately, that may not be. Look, what I'd like to see out of the Republicans is I'd like to see them take a very firm opposition to spending another $6 trillion, which is going to create a massive problem in our country, coupled with the taxes that I think will hurt investment, productivity, wage growth, and more jobs. However, I think not only should the Republicans be critical of what the Biden administration is doing, but they ought to have their own plan. They ought to have their own program. I do see some light from the fact that they're trying to offer their own infrastructure plan that actually focuses on roads and bridges. But I don't disagree with Abby. She makes a good point about where the energy is. It's unfortunate that it's there, because what I worry about is if they win the majority, which they very likely could, now what are we going to do? Without ideas, I mean, that's the whole purpose of politics, is for two parties to have ideas that improve the lives of Americans, not to be spending your time talking about Dr. Seuss and Mr. Potato Head. That's just, and fighting internally. It's got them completely off where they ought to be, in my opinion, for the good of the country.
Yeah, it's a fair question how sustainable this is for the GOP. Abby, it looks like the vote to oust Cheney is all but certain to happen Wednesday. What can we expect next week?
You know, I mean, to Governor Kasich's point, I mean, Liz Cheney is, more conservative than Elise Stefanik. And yet it looks very likely that she's going to be kicked out of leadership. Some of her allies are already talking about, well, you know, if Liz Cheney doesn't make it, I'll go ahead and vote for Elise Stefanik, no problem. That's a sign of real trouble for her. I think she knows it, though, but she's not backing down. She made clear in that op-ed this week that this is about the bigger principle for her, and she's willing to sacrifice her leadership position for it. So I think we can expect that, to see that happen. But what that says about the Republican Party and how they feel about the issues and about, the principles that the party stood for a long time, I think it's really not heading in the direction of, the issues like taxation and the size of government. It's not going in that direction at all.
It's certainly not. That is a very important point. Abby Phillip, thank you so much. John Kasich, Governor Kasich, thank you. And a note to our viewers, be sure
to
join Abby every Sunday morning at 8 Eastern for Inside Politics Sunday. And coming up in the Situation Room, Derek Chauvin and three former colleagues are now facing federal charges in the death of George Floyd. Details of the new grand jury indictment up next. Well, tonight, Derek Chauvin, convicted of murdering George Floyd, is facing new federal charges, along with three other former Minneapolis police officers present when Floyd was killed. CNN's Omar Jimenez is working the story for us. So, Omar, these new federal charges, they are significant. Walk us through what it means for Chauvin and the three other officers involved in Floyd's death.
Yeah, Pamela. So in this new federal indictment, there are three civil rights violations listed out. And each of these counts applies slightly differently to these four former Minneapolis police officers. Take Chauvin, for example. It says he willfully deprived George Floyd of his right to be free from unreasonable use of force by a police officer. And specifically, as you look at count one, it says that he kept his knees on George Floyd's body even after he became unresponsive. And then in the second count, it actually just focuses on former officers Tu Tao and J. Alexander King and says they saw what Chauvin was doing and failed to intervene. And then count three encompasses all of the former officers, including Thomas Lane, and says specifically the defendants saw George Floyd lying on the ground in clear need of medical care and willfully failed to aid Floyd, thereby acting with deliberate indifference to a substantial risk of harm to Floyd. Now, we've reached out to the attorneys for all four of these officers. Eric Nelson, the attorney for Chauvin, told me that he wasn't going to comment. Same with the attorney for J. Alexander King. We haven't heard back from the other officers, but it's also important to note this is different from the state cases where we're awaiting sentencing for Chauvin and different from the recently announced Department of Justice probe into patterns of policing at the Minneapolis Police Department.
And Chauvin was also charged for using unreasonable force on a 14-year-old in 2017. What are prosecutors saying about that incident?
Yeah, so this is a separate two-count indictment that also dropped. This is a federal indictment as well that also came out today. And this stems from a 2017 incident where Derek Chauvin is also accused of using an unreasonable amount of police force, but this time on a 14-year-old. And there, the first count says that Chauvin grabbed this teen by his neck and hit him multiple times with a flashlight. The second count says he allegedly put his knee on this teenager's neck and kept it there even after this teen was cuffed, no longer resisting, and was in the prone position. So again, two-count indictment that is separate from the other federal indictment that encompasses all of the four former police officers and comes a little over 2 weeks after we got that guilty verdict on all charges for Derek Chauvin on the state side of things.
Okay, CNN's Omar Jimenez, thank you for bringing us the latest there. And now let's dig deeper with CNN legal analyst Joey Jackson and Chris Stewart, co-lead counsel for George Floyd's family. Gentlemen, great to see you on this Friday. Chris, let's start with you. How does George Floyd's family feel seeing the Justice Department charge these officers with violating his civil rights?
Well, it was emotional. They're ecstatic about it. We actually talked to Attorney General Garland today, and I have not heard such passion or sympathy and intention from an attorney general in a very long time. He was first thing he started with, he said that no one's above the law, and that meant a lot.
If you could just tell us a little bit more about that call and what the exchange was like and the emotion that was exchanged. I mean, all of this, of course, is culminating after the guilty verdict for Derek Chauvin. But to hear from the attorney general himself, tell us a little bit more about that for the family, what it meant to them.
That meant a lot that he actually got on. And he just, you know, expressed his sympathy. And you could hear the intention in his voice and the determination to get the family justice. It meant a lot. We were very honored that he did that.
So, Joey, how rare is it for officers to face federal civil rights charges?
You know, Pamela, good to be with you. Good to be with you, Chris. It's very rare in recent years. And I think that we're seeing really a reckoning, and it's a lot different now. We should know and understand that political, you know, politics and anything else should not have anything to do with equal justice, should not have anything to do with when the government decides to get involved. But we've seen that that has been the case. I think this president, not to politicize this, but has given the indication that it's a new day in America. And I'm not going to intervene, has said Biden, with regard to what the Justice Department has done. And we've also had an attorney general to this point who has said that it's going to be about accountability. If we look at this, Pamela, very briefly in the broader context, what have we seen under Merrick Garland? We've seen pattern and practice investigations for at least two police departments, Minnesota, Louisville, with respect to how they have treated people of color. What are you doing? What can you do better? How can I hold you accountable? We've seen an indictment as it relates to Ahmaud Arbery in Georgia and him being hunted down, right, from a hate crime perspective, an indictment of three people. And now we're seeing officers from the federal government being held accountable in a civil rights, right, indictment. That's big. It means that people matter. It means there's a role for the federal government. Yes, there's states and the states will prosecute, but the federal government is saying we have a role too. And finally, Pamela, what they're also saying is we're going to hold officers accountable not only for what they do, but if you look at the indictment as it relates to Chauvin and his counterparts, what you don't do. In the event that someone is engaging in this force and you don't intervene, you're accountable. In the event that you believe that someone needs medical treatment and you're deliberately indifferent, you're accountable. So this is a very big deal, and it's an important day, I think, in our country as we look there at the four who have been indicted.
And they're not just focused on the George Floyd case. There is the case, as we know, their federal indictment stemming from an incident in 2017 with a 14-year-old involving Chauvin. This is disturbing. Chauvin is alleged to have held this teen by the throat, hit him multiple times in the head with a flashlight, and put his knee on the teen's neck, even after this boy was handcuffed and lying prone, as we just heard from Omar, laying it out like that. What do you think, Chris, when you hear something like that? What does the family think?
I mean, well, I see it all the time in my civil rights cases. The officers that do the acts that Chauvin did, they always have a pattern. They always have a history of having abused people before, but they're never disciplined. The department overlooks it. They don't interview witnesses. They believe false police reports, and they know that the cop is an issue. So we weren't shocked by it. You know, that's the problem. People aren't held accountable before they kill somebody.
It's sad that you're not shocked by that, you know?
No.
Joey, what do you think? How will all of this unfold in the next few months?
So I think it's really important. I mean, macro picture, again, I think that we cannot really stress enough. How significant is it, right? We have and we live in a society in which states prosecute crimes that happen in their jurisdiction. And we've seen in recent years the federal government look away. Nothing to see here. Now we're seeing where they're saying, you know what? If you engage in transgressions, we're going to have a problem. So how it plays out is how it's playing out. You're going to have cases that are brought in front of grand juries, right? Now, grand jury, just to be clear briefly, doesn't mean you're guilty. It means there are 23 people who are sitting there, right? The 16, there's a quorum, and 12, a majority say there's reason to believe you did something wrong. But it starts the process. And that's important, Pamela, because we've seen, right, in recent years, officers engage in transgressions, you're not arrested. If you're arrested, you're not indicted. If you're indicted, you're not convicted. And so I think this is really an important step towards the march of accountability and letting everyone know and understand that if you do something and you're not equal to justice and you're not equal to people of color and communities of color or anybody for that matter, the Justice Department has something to say about it. They certainly had something to say about it here.
All right, Joy Jackson, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much, Chris. Thanks so much as well.
Thank you, Pamela.
And we're also following new developments in the police shooting death of Andrew Brown Jr. and the controversy over body cam video of the deadly encounter. CNN's Brian Todd is working this story for us. So, Brian, the sheriff's department is under court order to show the video to Brown's family, and now the sheriff has set a date.
That's right, Pamela. We learned from Pasquotank County Sheriff Tommy Wooten just a short time ago that some members of the Brown family will be able to view selected portions of the tape this coming Tuesday, May 11th. So far, the family has only been able to view 20 seconds of body camera footage. And so far, the public has only seen this video that we'll show you showing sheriff's deputies speeding up to Andrew Brown's house on the morning of April 21st. This is a poll camera video from the street camera showing the deputies speeding up to his house in the back of a pickup truck wearing tactical gear. On that same tape, you then hear them shouting commands at him, but you do not see the actual shooting in that videotape. Also, some news today from Judge Jeffrey Foster's order that we received just a short time ago. We now know that there is a total of a little under 2 hours of body camera footage total from four body cameras and one dash camera. And with the judge's new order today, out of that 2 hours of tape, the Brown family will be able to view 18 minutes and 41 seconds of it. The judge says that the portions that are being withheld from the Brown family do not contain images of Andrew Brown and, quote, thus are not appropriate to release at this time. Now, the district attorney, Andrew Womble, has claimed that Andrew Brown made contact with the deputies twice with his vehicle. The Brown family says he never posed a threat and he was simply trying to get away. With Judge Foster's order today, we heard the judge's version of that incident. Here's a quote from it. Quote, upon the arrival on the scene of the deputies, Brown attempted to flee the scene and escape apprehension. As a result of Brown's effort to flee the scene, at least one and as many as three officers fired their weapons into the vehicle operated by Brown. Now, a source close to the Brown family told me a short time ago, this is regarding the Brown family's viewing of the tape this coming Tuesday, quote, we don't anticipate seeing anything we don't already know. We think it will show an unjustified shooting. Protesters have been out almost every day, Pamela. They've been calling for the full release of every minute of this footage. They may not get that at this point, and they may not get it for about 30 days.
All right, CNN's Brian Todd, thanks so much. Live for us in North Carolina. And just ahead, the Situation Room, Texas is poised to become the latest state to impose harsh new restrictions on voting. We're going to bring you the details right after a quick break. Stay with us. Well, Texas could be on the verge of joining several other Republican-led states, making it harder for people to vote. CNN's Ed Lavandera is following the story from the Texas State Capitol in Austin. Ed, the bill just passed the state's House legislature. What does this mean for voters?
Hey, Pamela. Well, there's basically a couple different versions of this bill. So broadly speaking, there are a number of issues that voter rights activists say are highly troubling in this controversial bill. There are things like not allowing election officials to mail out unsolicited mail-in ballots. There would be cuts on the length of voting, early voting hours, locations of drop boxes for ballots as well. So there's a whole slew of issues here that voting rights activists are terribly concerned about. It has been contentious debate, but right now this goes over to the Senate side and essentially both chambers of the state legislature here have to hammer out a single version. So, but the bottom line is that state lawmakers here, Republican state lawmakers, control every level of government here. So the passage of this is very likely. The ACLU said today that the Texas House has just passed one of the worst anti-voting bills in the country that targets voters of color, disabilities, and civil servants who run our elections. They know this bill is designed to suppress the vote by making voting harder. The governor of Texas has signaled his support for the bill, saying that this ensures the integrity of the election. But Pamela, the bottom line is even Republicans admit that in the most recent election, there is no evidence of widespread voter fraud. And as one Democrat said today, Republicans are fighting a phantom problem. Pamela?
Phantom problem. All right, Ed Lavandera, live for us from Texas. Thanks so much. Coming up, this is terrifying. I find this terrifying. A 20-ton uncontrolled Chinese rocket is expected to crash into Earth as soon as tomorrow, but officials still have no idea where it will land. I'm like, I hope. Well, tonight, officials are keeping a close eye on a 20-ton Chinese rocket that's expected to crash somewhere on Earth as soon as tomorrow. Let's get an update from our chief national security correspondent, Jim Sciutto, and CNN's David Culver. Jim, the U.S. military is tracking this out-of-control rocket. Are they any closer to knowing when and where it will crash?
They are, Pamela. This is the latest information. The latest track has this coming down to Earth in Turkmenistan, in Central Asia. The timing of this, tomorrow evening, 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. This would be early Sunday morning hours in Central Asia. Of course, the problem with that is that's land. It's not the sea, where it would not be a danger, potentially populated areas. That's the issue here. China made a mistake here, in effect, from the view of the U.S. It sent a very large rocket stage into orbit. Typically, these are multi-stage rockets. You've seen the movies before, Apollo 13 and so on. They typically fall to Earth before getting into orbit. This one went into orbit, which means it has to come back into the Earth's atmosphere. And if it's big enough, as this one is, the size of a school bus, 22 tons, it does not burn up in the Earth's atmosphere. And that's where we are today. Same thing happened last year with a Chinese rocket. They're going to be watching this very closely in the next 24 hours.
Wow. So what is the Chinese government saying about all this, David?
Pamela, it's interesting hearing Jim there describe it, because they are normally very proud about these rockets when they're launching. However, in this case, they've been rather quiet. The one exception coming from Chinese officials on Friday, where they said that the chance of this doing any harm or damage is extremely low. I think the bigger context here is looking at what is a growing concern. And that is, as Jim pointed out, this happened last year with a sizable rocket that they put up and the debris coming back, and what seems to be growing congestion up in space. I mean, if you look at what China has been doing, they've been putting billions of dollars into their space program. Launches continued really uninterrupted through much of the pandemic and are expected to continue going forward. They have ambitions for Mars. They have a lot on their radar going ahead, and they're not saying much about what they're tracking. It seems that's mostly coming from U.S. officials, interestingly enough, Pamela.
Jim Sciutto, David Culver, thanks so much. And breaking news next on The Situation Room, violence erupting at a Muslim holy site in Jerusalem. We'll get a live update on clashes between Israeli police and Palestinian worshipers. There's breaking news coming into The Situation Room. Clashes between Israeli police and Palestinian worshipers at a Muslim holy site in Jerusalem. CNN's Hadass Gold is working the story for us. Hadass, we're seeing reports of multiple people injured.
Yeah, Pamela, according to the Palestinian Red Crescent, 163 people have been injured at the Al-Aqsa Mosque after police clashed with Palestinians following the conclusion of the evening prayers. 80 of those injured were taken to the hospital, according to the Palestinian Red Crescent, with wounds caused by rubber-coated bullets. Pamela, this is some of the most significant night of unrest that this city has seen in years. And we're seeing some dramatic footage, which I believe we're showing right now, of police using stun grenades at the compound, and videos from inside the mosque even showing some stun grenades landing inside of the mosque. Now, police say that they moved in after people started throwing rocks and other objects at them. At one point, even the imam of the mosque made an appeal for those who were there to calm down. Now, some Palestinians say the clashes began after worshippers in large numbers were prevented from entering the mosque and when they attempted to move away police barricades. Now, Pamela, this night is not coming out of nowhere. Tensions have been boiling in Jerusalem for several weeks now. About 2 weeks ago, there were clashes at the Damascus Gate entrance to the Old City when police tried to prevent Palestinians from gathering there, which is a popular thing to do right now during the Ramadan holidays. That same evening, at some of the worst nights of clashes, there was a march of several hundred Jewish extremists. We've also seen incidents of violence between Palestinians and Israelis, but all of this contributing to a very tense time in the city. And it's worth noting that Ramadan is coming to an end, and Monday is Jerusalem Day when Israel marks the day.
Thanks. I'm Pamela Brown. I'll see you tomorrow at this time. Aaron Burnett out front, up next.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
You can now watch CNN's Five Things on Max. Each weekday, Kate Baldwin breaks down the five essential news stories in 5 minutes or less. She'll get you up to speed and on with your day. CNN's Five Things with Kate Baldwin, streaming weekdays exclusively on Max.